In December of 2017, the Gimbel UFO video was published by the New York Times. Since then, it has captivated believers and has become a target by the debunkers. Yet despite the drastic difference in regards to interpretations by both sides, one fact remains. The video is downright intriguing. Now, new documents released to the Black Vault may reveal that the Weapons System Officer, or WISO, who encountered the craft, appeared before Senate staffers in 2019 to brief them on the event. The Black Vault sought records over the course of 3 years, and now new documents have been released. Stay tuned. You're about to journey inside the Black Vault. That's right, everybody. As always, thank you so much for tuning in and taking this journey inside the Black Vault with me. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr., founder and creator of theblackvault.com. And although I had a little bit of a different plan for recording today, right when I was about to start that, something popped into my inbox and I had to shift gears. And here's why. This actually continues a story that I first wrote last year. However, the research has now spanned since about 2019, I believe it was, when I first found reference to it. Now, let me go ahead and kind of catch you guys up here before I get to the new documents. Just as a refresher, if you didn't see this story, I had originally published it November 16, 2021. And hopefully you can see it on your screen there if you're watching on the video version or if you're listening to the audio. I'm just going to read a few things as I go through here. But essentially, at that time, when I wrote this last year, I had already been chasing these documents for about 2 years. And you can see here, I did a video on it. You're more than welcome to watch that. I'll link it in the show notes below. But here is kind of the paper trail that leads up to the discovery today. And I really don't have all the answers, but you may be interested in what I believe was just released. But first, like I said, the background. Here in June of 2019, I was going through all sorts of documents. The internal communications to me are key when trying to understand what is really going on. Sure, summary reports and project documents and stuff like that. Yeah, those are all interesting, but the behind-the-scenes banter, when you can get it through FOIA, is sometimes gold. And as you can see here, this is part of that gold. Now, in that 2019 request, this particular email stuck out. And this was written by somebody inside the Navy, and it was about a inquiry from Politico, so obviously during the time that they were doing a UAP story. And internally, you can see here, team, please see the below. Can you please check into it? I noticed on a previous OLA weekly, there was a brief to some staffers on from a similar sounding program office. So yes, that error was in there grammatically with the extra word. OLA is Office of Legislative Affairs. So obviously that was the office within the Navy that was coordinating with Senate staffers, congressional staffers of some kind for a UAP briefing. So I had filed another request. In this article, I go through all the case numbers for anybody who wants to fact check, but had filed another case then kind of branching out from that original find. So I often, you've heard this on this channel before, but this is why, liken the FOIA process to a tree and you start with your trunk and it just branches off and everything else. This is a prime example of just that, where the trunk was those original documents branched off into finding a little bit more information about the briefing, which is where at the time I thought we were on the verge of exposing a new UAP encounter. Not sure if we've debunked that possibility yet, but bear with me. So that second FOIA case revealed this. Anomalous aerial vehicle encounter brief to SASC PSMs. PSMs are professional staff members of the Senate Armed Services Committee. That's SASC. On 16 January of an unknown date, and year, I should say, an F-18 pilot from VFA-103 met with SASC PSMs, and then a bunch of blacked out redacted here, likely indicating the names. Senate Armed Services Committee professional staff members have continuing interest in unidentified aerial vehicle intercepts that have occurred in the working airspace off the U.S. coast. And, again, a redaction, so likely a name, gave a detailed brief on his personal encounter. That was it out of that particular FOIA release. A little bit more detail, but what was indicated here was that it was potentially a brand new UAP encounter for a couple different reasons. VFA 103, that is stationed at NAS Oceana, which is off the, which is in Virginia, and they primarily operate off the coast of Virginia, which is where other aerial encounters have happened. My friends over at The Drive, The War Zone, have covered that extensively. I had cross-referenced what they had uncovered, and VFA 103 was not mentioned in any of those encounters. So it seemed that this was something brand new. Still could be, but again, I'll get to that in a moment. But that was where I felt, hey, we are on to potentially a new case. So I filed, you guessed it, another FOIA request based on the reference to this briefing. Now, let me go ahead and just give me one moment here as I switch screens. So here is the result of that FOIA request in just today. It's dated April 5th, but it was sent to me on April 6th. Of 2022. I won't read you the whole letter, but what I was essentially looking for was the following. All documents pertaining to a January 2019 briefing by an F-18 pilot from VFA-103 stationed at Naval Air Station Oceana, Virginia Beach, Virginia. This briefing was revealed in FOIA case, and I gave the case number, and was referred to in the following way. Quote, anomalous aerial vehicle encounter brief to Senate Armed Service Committee professional staff members. On 16 January, an F-18 pilot from VFA-103 met with SASC PSMs. SASC PSMs have continuing interest in unidentified aerial vehicle intercepts that have occurred in the working airspace off the U.S. East Coast and gave a detailed brief on his personal encounter. I ask that you include all records that pertain to this briefing. This would include, but not be limited to, emails, reports, PowerPoint presentations, letters, memos, videos, photos, etc. that may pertain to this request. I ask that you use your best discretion of the officials searched. So the I reread a quote that I already read to you in there, but again, I do that in FOIAs for the FOIA people out there. I encourage you to do the same. It really gives them as much detail as possible, and you're obviously citing something that gives the evidence that what you're requesting actually exists. So that's why you generally do that. Seems repetitive or too much sometimes, but trust me, it's very worthwhile. You can see here the Office of Legislative Affairs has identified one document totaling four pages that are responsive to your request. The redactions, which we'll get to, but you can see here cited as B1, that's national security information. You'll also see B5, which is considered internal deliberation. That's a very tough one to fight. It's sad when that comes up. And then also B6, which is kind of that privacy information, names, personally identifying information. Fast forward to the document. It's a four pages, three with content of a secret email thread, classified secret, you can see here. Reason being, national security information, whatever is withheld under B1 in the redactions, are likely what makes it secret. I'm going to read it for the audio version. It's not very long, but at least you can follow me along on the video. And if you're listening, here you go. The subject matter is AAR for 16 January FA-18 pilot brief to Senate Armed Service Committee professional staff members on anomalous aerial vehicle detection event in 2015. Even though I want to point this out here, you can see it was sent in 2019. For whatever reason, they had redacted the date on that one FOIA released. Don't ask me why, I have no idea. It's very interesting, you can see some of these redactions, but obviously now we're starting to paint a picture here. 2015 event, 2019 briefing. Here's the message itself. Again, once classified secret, now declassified, with redactions. Admiral, provided for your SA or situational awareness, the following is an AAR for the 16 January unclassified FA-18 pilot brief given to Senate Armed Services Committee professional staff members regarding an unresolved aerial vehicle detection event off the coast of Jacksonville in redacted. Not sure why. If that's a date, we've already established 2015. And if it's a potentially designator for an area of operation, maybe. Looks too short to me. Looks like a date. So I think that was potentially a mistake. I am appealing this, if you probably haven't guessed already, and I'll go through where I feel some of this stuff is silly, but that is one that I am appealing based on the potentially safe assumption that it is a date. This AAR has not been coordinated with any outside office or forwarded to anywhere else. And then you'll see about two redacted lines. Exemption B5. That's internal deliberation. Not sure why. Summary. On 16 January, then redacted as B1, National Security Information. So whatever they're hiding, they don't want to maybe know us to know the year, although that was already established. Looks a little bit longer redaction-wise. So I'm not sure what's there. On 16 January, and actually, let me rephrase that. Even though this looks like a 1, and you can see a 6 here, which is likely a name, this may have been accidentally marked as a national security information. So forgive me, this is brand new too, so I may be correcting myself here as I talk, because I've already gone over this a couple times, but it's, as you can tell, kind of hard to read in areas. So I think that that's a 1 that likely is mismarked. So on 16 January, potentially a name, gave Senate Armed Services Committee professional staff members his account of an instance where he detected an anomalous air vehicle in the warning area located, and then redacted, that's obviously the location. B6 redaction, which is a name, is currently serving as a pilot in, also another B1 redaction, national security information, likely places that pilot in a certain area, which they don't want to do. During the time of the incident in, and then it potentially looks like a B1 redaction, it's horrible the way that this is compressed, also looks like the length of a year. So during the time of the incident in, redacted, he was serving as a naval flight officer in another redaction. The overall atmosphere in this meeting was very professional. The PSMs were genuinely interested to hear his account of what happened during his air vehicle detection in, redacted. They continue to show interest in learning more about this types of detections, and they are curious as to the way ahead the Navy intends to take it. Now, a quick timestamp. This is 2019. So again, a lot of things are kind of unfolding here with the UAP task force, which hasn't been acknowledged yet. Those guidelines that were reported by Politico first that were, again, kind of around this time frame. Things happen fast in the UAP world. But at this point, you know, just to kind of timestamp it, that's where there was some kind of uncertainty on where the Navy was going to take it. Let me continue reading. In addition to, and then redacted with no citation, two naval aviators from ONI, redacted, were also in attendance at this brief, redacted and redacted, so obviously two names. Both of them had been part of squadrons based out of NAS Oceania. While they offered no firsthand accounts of detecting anomalous aerial vehicles, they were very familiar with the occurrences and were queried by the professional staff members a few times as to what they had observed and learned. In redacted, and then another redaction, clearly a name, was serving as a weapons systems officer in redacted. At that time, the squadron was participating in COM2X with the, and then another national security redaction, as part of the pre-deployment workup cycle. Towards the end of one of the night flights, another redaction was conducted during the at-sea period. He and his pilot detected an air contact via, and then a redacted national security, so maybe a weapon system or a sensor of some kind. So via redacted, coming from the east and heading towards the ship, initially thinking it may be a simulated adversary aircraft as part of the COM2X scenario, he took a redacted lock to investigate further. The contact was at approximately redacted. with a stable track file, the two aircraft determined that it was not a false hit, and they were able to gain a lock via the, and then redacted line and a half, or about a line or so, which further indicated the vehicle had a redacted. It became clear via, I say it both ways, I don't know what the right way, via, and then quite a few redacted lines. The pilot maneuvered the redacted to maintain redacted lock in an effort to redacted. I again, doing this for the audio version, it sounds a little bit silly, but I'm trying to give a verbal representation of what we are seeing here visually. For those watching the video, and now for you listening, this next line is going to upset a lot of people, because this was the most frustrating aspect of the declassified but heavily redacted classified UAP report that I reported on about a week and a half ago. Obviously made worldwide headlines because that was something that had never been out before and gave a little bit more information. The most frustrating aspect, all of the shapes of the UAP detected through their study were all redacted. Well, look at here. The next line says, the air vehicle appeared to be shaped like, and then redacted. And in fact, it's not a short redaction. It goes on for quite a bit, a pretty big portion of the page, maybe about 30% or so, a third of it that is redacted. All B1, all national security information. So obviously it goes well into detail beyond just a shape. What that detail is unknown. Now, beyond this heavily redacted paragraph, there is one sentence that survived that big old black box for national security reason. And for me, it's potentially the most intriguing aspect of this whole release. And it reads, in December 2017, a portion of that video was aired by the press, and congressional interest in these sightings began to grow. If all of this is the same 2015 encounter, so everything here that we can't read, assuming that they are talking about the shape and then potentially other characteristics, I mean, who knows? There's quite a lot of information you can fit in there. But assuming they didn't shift gears, and in this portion of the redacted area, shifts gears to the gimbal sighting, and then they reveal this line in December 2017, a portion of that video was aired. It may be safe to say that this entire thing is the pilot of the gimbal video coming forward and giving this unclassified briefing. Now, we know in December of 2017, there were two videos that were published. The FLIR, which was the Nimitz encounter video from November of 2004, published by the New York Times. That's obviously not this, because we've already made reference to 2015. And then the gimbal video. And a story that I wrote quite a few years ago now got the Navy on the record about that video. It had never been revealed before that the gimbal video was shot on 21 January 2015. That fits. That also fits the COMTUEX connection. That training, which let me pull up here a different article I'm looking at, make sure I get the dates right, that lasted from January 15th through February 4th. So if this was shot in 2015, meaning the gimbal, in 2015 on 21 January, then that fits. And I'm sure somebody talked about it. So just trust me, my brain is fried with all of these different dates and acronyms and stories and trying to keep up on OSAP this and ATIP that and UAP over here and UFO over there and so on and so forth. So it's kind of hard, but I'm sure someone somewhere talked about the COM2X connection. It just didn't really ring a bell to me. But regardless, you put all those pieces together of the puzzle, it appears that this is likely the gimbal pilot who gave the briefing. They talk about the video that created the congressional interest based on it being published. And so all of this, boy, I'd love to see it, because I think, you know, people like Mick West, who have really dug in and analyzed the video, this information could be key to either confirming what he's been saying or potentially saying, sorry, this additional information proves otherwise. So that is something that I think we will fight for through the appeal. And yes, I am structuring it probably in the next week or so. I have 90 days to do it. So at a time like this, I usually take a deep breath, digest it, read all of this a couple of times, see what I can fight, see what's a lost cause, and go from there. So I want to go back to reading the document for you, but again, that really was a key line I wanted to make sure I pointed out to you. In this email chain that was written to this admiral, by the way, if I didn't mention it, the admiral is unknown. It's just a admiral because the names are redacted. But in this email and kind of situational awareness briefing to the admiral, they also do a bullet point list of what the professional staff members were interested in. So I'm going to read those PSM interest areas to you. The staffers asked if the object seemed aware of the redacted or the Navy ships in the area. The staffers also asked redacted if he knew if the redacted observed the unidentified craft via radar as he did. Now, I'm kind of curious what they're referring to there, like what else was in the area that they cannot name. So that's kind of interesting. And they wanted to see if the objects were aware of, again, something that they could not name. So what, during this COM2X exercise, was that classified for them not to be able to be mentioned? I'm not insinuating a conspiracy, by the way, on that, but rather intrigue that they have this type of new sensor weaponry. What do they got out there? Not really sure. Staffers were interested in the shape of the unidentified object and how it compared to the redacted objects identified by other pilots. So other pilots were seeing something that were identified, but they can't tell you what it was. So that also was in a very intriguing redaction there, that what is a threat to national security that pilots were seeing, and how did they compare to this other pilot's sighting? Insinuating potentially the same thing. Obviously, the staffers are good with their questioning. I mean, no complaints. It looks like they were genuinely interested and digging. Staffers were interested in the amount of experience Redacted had and the amount of flight hours he had. They were very respectful of his opinions and thoughts based on his 700 plus hours of experience at the time. Likely, that's the gimbal pilot, the guy who filmed the gimbal video. We now know he's got over 700 hours of flight time as experience. Staffers also asked about the action the Navy took following Redacted return to the ship, to include his debrief by the intelligence professionals and actions taken by the CVW staff, commander of the strike group, and others throughout the chain of command. The staffers were disappointed by the lack of action taken by the Navy. They also wondered what happened to the video evidence of the encounter. The staffers also asked if Redacted was forced to take a drug test following the incident or was harassed. Couple things to unpack there. What happened to the video? So if this is the gimbal and they've already made reference to it, what are they talking about? Is there an extended one? Is there a second incident? So maybe that blacked out paragraph does talk about another incident, and then it kind of shifts gears under the redaction, so we don't know. And then it ends with, in December 17, this came out and created the interest. So are we putting that together? I don't know. Everything else matches up, though. So it's one of those, look, we're working together. I don't have all the answers. That's why I love to do videos like this, to kind of show you guys, hey, this is what we have. This is what we know. This is what we've learned. And this is what we have no idea about. And that is one of those things where I think we have just no idea at this point. The other part was, where did the drug test and harassment question come from? Other than, was that based on experience? Meaning, did those PSMs hear that before and go, hey, you know, is this a trend? Are they drug testing all these guys? Did they encourage the drug testing? Did they discourage the drug testing? You know, what was the root of that question? Sadly, with these bullet points, they're just that. It's not a transcript, not a quote. We also don't hear what the pilot said in response to these questions, which is also very much a shame. Next point, the staffers also asked about the chain of custody of the video of the encounter. The staffers are generally disappointed that the Navy does not save any video of these encounters, and the chain of custody is lacking. So that also may play in that the gimbal clip that kind of maybe was saved as a just that, a clip, was the one that came out, that leaked out, then later approved for release a couple years later by the Navy. Is there something else? Was there some, was there an extended version that was talked about here that wasn't saved? And I hate to say it, this actually coincides with the Navy stance that what they released in that FOIA request that I had done that spanned a couple years. And then again, they did that proactive release publicly. It reinforces that there's nothing else. Now, keep in mind, this was a classified secret exchange up until today. So all of this on these types of conspiracies, and trust me, I'm all for a good conspiracy and cover up. When you allege something, you have to back it up. And if you don't have the backed up evidence, we don't know if the Navy is lying. But sadly, this does reinforce the stance. And when you start getting evidence like this, what's the more likely scenario? That maybe it's true they don't have a bigger clip, or that they are fabricating all this material to throw us all off, and they have like a 28-minute or 23-minute, you know, gimbal video. I doubt it. So I feel that maybe we're on to the reality that whatever we have on the gimbal video-wise is it, and there's not going to be anything miraculously discovered. We'll see. I hope I'm wrong. I'm just saying, like, these are pieces of the puzzle, and we just have to take it all for what it's worth. Next bullet point. Overall, the staffers desired, redacted, to spread the word that Congress is interested in this topic and are willing to hear about their experiences. Staffers asked all three naval aviators why they had the perception that the unidentified objects were redacted. The staffers were shocked that the range fowlers in 2014 to 2015 redacted full line. That is the first time a pilot communicated to the staffers, redacted, to a large extent. Pretty interesting there on the redactions. Wonder what that is. Whenever you see the word shocked in anything, it means there's something good. Of course, it has to be redacted. Next point. Finally, the SSCI staffer wanted to know the official Navy response and reaction to these reports and observances. It'd be great to know what the pilot said. The staffers indicated that Senator Reid, Senator Durbin, and Senator Menendez were all interested in this topic and will likely desire to talk with pilots directly who observed these unexplained craft. Last one, I think. Yes, last bullet point. The SASC staffers indicated there is a low possibility that this topic will come up during the CNO's posture hearings scheduled for February to March 2019. You'll see here a bunch of redaction, big paragraph B5. That's internal deliberation. Not really sure what could be there. It could be just personal banter to the Admiral. A lot of times you do see B5 as a redaction. The B5 redaction, as I noted earlier in the video, very hard to fight. But in the same respect, it's also a highly controversial citation. And it's been bantered about for many, many years. And Congress is aiming to try and help redactions utilizing B5. And essentially, what we call it in the FOIA world, some of you may have heard me say this before, it's essentially the redacted if you want to exemption. There's no rhyme or reason, and that's why it's so controversial. So I'm fighting that as well in hopes to get some of it. On another minor note, I'll go back to the minor note. Here you can see the redactions on the names, Navy Office of Legislative Affairs. You can see there it's all redacted, but that's where it came. All the people that were in attendance are all redacted under B6. That's pretty standard. I would imagine one of the individuals here from ONI would be Jay Stratton. You've heard me talk about him quite a bit. He was what was then revealed, although I kind of assumed it from 2019. Very, very involved in the UAP effort with the Navy. It was then revealed through FOIA that he was the one that originally wrote some of the UAP statements I got that broke the story that the gimbal, FLIR, and GoFast were considered unidentified and labeled as UAP. And then recently, in the last couple of months, got a Navy document that solidified in black and white. He was the head of the UAP task force, and he was the guy giving the classified briefings. So when I say pieces to the puzzle, you have to really piece together stuff, because some of those documents to piece all of that together came from the DOD and the Office of the Secretary of Defense, Joint Chiefs of Staff, and NASA, and the Navy. So you got to put all those together to create a much bigger picture. So you can see here more names, and just the identifier there. Again, was secret, that was declassified. I always love seeing this. It dispels the myth that no classified information can ever be released through FOIA until it hits, I think somebody said 30 years. That was all bunk. You can see here, declassify on 2046, yet I was still able to get it. So that debunks the myth. I always love debunking those types of silly myths. Anyway, that's it. That's a breakdown of the document. You can see there's still a lot of unanswered questions, but this really takes that story to the next level, to where we learn a few other things. Now, that minor note that I referenced, I want to go back to it very, very quickly and close the video with this. I don't really have an exact answer to this, but I want to point it out because I think I know what's going on. If on your screen, you can see, I'm going to zoom in here. It gets a little bit blurry. I'm sorry for the audio version, but hopefully my point will resonate verbally as well. Look at the difference in redactions that were utilized and how they were redacted. And you can see here that this was obviously put in on the copy that I'm looking at. Likely these redactions were added on that copy. This redaction is different. See how these redactions are different? And they're redacted different in red and much more compressed, and this is much more crisp. That indicates a multi-layer review process and redactions being added by multiple layers of that review process. So likely this was the first review. It gets copied, and just because I've scanned millions of documents, this likely was then scanned in the way that this looks. Then more redactions were added by somebody else. So whomever did the original one and only redacted this, somebody decided to redact everything else. So I bet you, in my appeal, I'm going to note that and say that likely what we are looking at are multiple layered redactions, and essentially that this information probably passed the clearance of that first layer and they didn't have an objection, but somebody else came aboard and said, nope, redact everything. You can see here too the difference, that these redactions were likely from that first layer and then others came after. And you can see that by, again, the different coloring of the layers. And you can see here that potentially there was a third where you have these types of redactions that look like they were part of the scan, but different colored redactions. And no, they generally don't change the color based on the redaction itself, because here is an obvious B6 redaction, which is white, probably that first or, you know, first layer. And there's a B6 redaction, which is potentially a second layer, but in red, different font and everything. So I think that potentially we're looking at, if I were to guess, three layers. The first two layers, they do all the ones that you see that are again, the red and the white, but very heavily compressed. The third layer comes in, you can see here, another very crisp B5 and a very crisp black redaction. And I know that some of you may think I'm going crazy pointing that out, but I want to do that because it shows the immense secrecy of the UAP and UFO topic. But on top of that, how many hands are going into redacting these records? Now, review processes do take place in non-UFO and UAP related cases throughout every agency. That's common, don't get me wrong. But I will say that the redactions like this stick out to me on this particular request as being abnormal. So reviews, absolutely normal, but adding layers of redactions that are likely passing the test through one and they're allowed to release it, but then it goes to somebody else and they're like, no, you can't release this, doesn't make any sense. All of this is probably Navy information also. So we're not dealing with other agencies, which is sometimes you deal with. So Navy will do a pass on their information, but then someone else does another layer, Air Force, if they have information on it. I saw that in the classified report, that I got released, where 13 different entities had to review their respective information for release. Here is all Navy. So OLA, the Office of Legislative Affairs, Navy. Sure, the Senate Armed Services Committee, the professional staff members took a role, but they don't do the redactions because they are not what's called a OPR. They're not an Office of Primary Responsibility or OCA, the original classifying authority of information like this. So likely too much info for some of you, but for you geeks like me, I love stuff like that because, again, it reinforces that secrecy and the very careful process that they've now developed to release UFO and UFO related information and UAP related information. So not sure if we're on that road to disclosure, like some people say, and others have claimed a new era of transparency. And although I do agree, and it's a good thing that the conversation has changed, it is like pulling teeth to get records like this. So that disclosure and that era of transparency, you can see from this video alone why I respectfully disagree. Hopefully you guys got some use out of it. Please, by all means, if you're watching on YouTube, give me your comments below. I always like reading those. Your ideas, your responses, please feel free to post. And while you're down there, as you know, not to beat the dead horse, please click that thumbs up button and make sure you are subscribed to the channel. Sharing is the biggest help. And if you feel so inclined, there is a Patreon link for as little as a dollar a month. It goes right back into this website. And trust me, every penny helps keep all of this online and the research flowing. If you're listening on the audio podcast version, or you don't know there's an audio podcast version, just know that on every podcast platform, search for the Black Vault Radio. Most of these presentations, but not all, go down to audio form. So even though I use a lot of visuals, I do try and make a effort to make all the verbal things that I say make sense, even though some of you may not be able to see the visuals. And if you're listening and had no idea I had a YouTube channel, I'll give you the reverse. Go to www.theblackvault.com/live. That will bounce you to the visual presentation and have fun. Make sure you subscribe to both. And again, any review helps. Really do appreciate your time. This is John Greenwald Jr. signing off, and we'll see you next time.